The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the simile of the raft. We find this in Majjhima Nikaya 22. Some of you are familiar with this. It's said very often. It's not an uncommon simile of the raft. I'm going to abbreviate it a little bit for the purpose of tonight's teaching, and this abbreviated form shows up in the Samyutta, but I can't remember where exactly. So this is the Buddha. He's giving this teaching to his monastics, and he says, imagine a person in the course of a journey arrives at a great expanse of water. And the near shore is dubious and perilous, and the far shore is a sanctuary free of peril. But there's no ferry boat or bridge to take them across the water. So the person thinks, what if I collected grass and twigs and branches and leaves and bound them together as a raft? And then supported by the raft and paddling with my hands and feet, I should then be able to reach the far shore. So this idea of you find yourself with this great expanse of water, we could say this is like a flood, you know, something that's just big and going to take you away. This journey that the Buddha's pointing to, we could say this is just one's life. Just, you know, what we experience in the just living this human life, and then we encounter something that feels like it's in our way, and it's only a problem because we could just stay where we are, right? We're on dry land, and then we just see in front of us this water, but it's only a problem because where we are feels dubious and perilous. I love these words. These are not usually in my vocabulary, and I'm going to unpack them a little bit. So there's this great expanse of water. It's our floods. This, we could also say it's this overwhelmed feeling or this getting like swept along. Sometimes when we feel like there's a lot of uncomfortableness, quote unquote, or stress or suffering in the world or suffering in our life, it just can feel like, oh, we're getting pushed around by it, and it can feel like it's just too much. And then the far shore, what's on the other side of this great expanse of water, feels like it would be a sanctuary. It feels like, oh, if I could just be over there, things would be fine. Not here and not in the midst of the water, but somewhere over there. And then there's this idea of, okay, we can make a raft. And I love this part where the Buddha says, what leaves and twigs and branches. He's not saying, go to REI, get one of those rafts, you know, inflatable ones. No, he's talking about what's exactly there on the riverbank. Exactly what's there, right here, this moment. We have leaves, branches, and twigs. We don't have exactly what we want to build the perfect raft, but it's what's available, and we can build a raft to get across to the other side. So this is the theme for the teachings this month of August. So tonight I want to spend some time just unpacking this idea of the near shore being dubious and perilous. And in subsequent teachings, we'll talk about the floods, we'll talk about the far shore, we'll talk about the raft, these types of things. But right now, I want to talk about this idea of being dubious and perilous. So we could say that one of this whole notion of a near shore, like where we find ourselves right now, this moment, is made up of our experience, but also like our habits, our patterns, the maybe beliefs and views that we have. It's a big part of our experience that are like contributing to what experience that we're having. And the beautiful thing I would say about Buddhist practice is that it's not asking us to be anybody that we aren't. It's not saying that you have to be this way and you can't be another way. It's saying just meet your life as it is right now. And it probably happens to have grass, leaves, and twigs, and branches, and all these kinds of things, but also some uncomfortableness. Some uncomfortableness. This is part of the human experience. And part of practice is just to recognize that. There's this way in which we always want to distract ourselves and avoid ourselves and not notice. But the truth of reality, we could say, is this uncomfortableness. And I'm using this word uncomfortable, but many of you will be familiar with this word dukkha. I'm using this single word for this wide as possible range of meanings. Something that's just, maybe if you focus on it, it is a little bit uncomfortable, but if you didn't focus on it, you wouldn't even notice. That's dukkha. Terror, horrifying things, that's dukkha as well. This one word for this huge range, it's quite something. We don't have an English word that's similar. In the guided meditation, I wanted to use the word uncomfortable because I didn't want us to jump into the most difficult thing, because then we often just get, you know, overwhelmed, and before we know it, we're in the floods in this water. So I wanted us to stay on the near shore and just to be with what's mildly uncomfortable. So I love this translator. He's using dubious and perilous. Dubious. Some English words we could use, like suspect or unreliable or deceptive. These ways that we, our habits and patterns, the way that we're showing up, that seem to offer peace and security, but there's a way in which they are resting on unstable ground, we might say. They're not consistently offering peace and ease. And so I would like to say some examples. One is chronically striving. It's this thing that we often do, right? We feel like, okay, well, as soon as I get this other thing done, and as soon as I achieve this, as soon as I attain that, then I'll relax, then I'll be happy, then everything will be fine. And then, right? Probably all of us have finally finished that big project, whether it's redoing the room in our house or whether it's a professional thing, and then realize, oh, I'm not as happy, or it's not as perfect as I thought it was going to be. Okay, well, clearly I need to do the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And before you know it, your whole life is one long to-do list. So this is one way that we might say is kind of like this dubious, because there's this always seeking, like this next goal, or maybe even the next simulation or stimulation, rather. Well, simulation maybe too, you know, the whatever it might be. But it's a way that it's always feel like, no, there needs to be more. I have to find it. I have to do it. This is one way in which the near shore is a little bit dubious. We think it's going to make us happy, but part of us recognizes that, in fact, it doesn't. So those, something else that makes the near shore dubious is this belief that we can control all kinds of things and all kinds of people. It turns out, right, all of us have this experience. We don't control nearly what we think we can control, but it doesn't stop us from trying. People that are close to us, family members, or even people that we don't even have relationships with that we see on the news or something like this. Like, you know, if that person would just do X, Y, or Z, then everything would be so much better. And then we find ourselves getting a little bit irritated feeling uncomfortable because they're not doing X, Y, and Z, even though it's so clear that they should. Clear to us what they should do. It's fascinating, right? How there's a part of us that recognizes we don't control them, but we keep trying in these subtle and obvious ways. And the subtle ways are we just are something like we have this mental story or this mental activity that's like, oh, gee, when are they going to do this? If only they would do this, then it would be better. It would make my life so much better if they would do this, right? As humans, we do this. And what's fascinating is we do this for ourselves too. Like, okay, well, if only I could meditate daily for 12 hours and then exercise for 10 hours and sleep for 8 hours. And you're like, we have all these things that we feel like we should make ourselves do. And yet we can't quite make ourselves do all the things that we know are good for us, eat the right things and all this kind of stuff, right? So we don't even control ourselves in the way that we think we do or the way that we want to. And yet we keep trying. And never in your life have you been able to have perfect control over yourself. You couldn't stop aging. You couldn't stop injuries or having pain or heal yourself faster or any of these types of things. So this is part of what the Buddha is pointing to about the near shore being dubious. There's also maybe this way in which we might say that we are often like chasing this external validation, wanting people to like us and approve of us. Of course we do. Of course we do this. But there's this way if we're depending on praise or acknowledgement, then we realize that the seeking social validation just turns out to these other people out there that we can't control, they turn out to be kind of fickle. They're not always approving in a way that we would like or that always are making us feel better. And that if having an identity or a way that we feel about ourselves that's dependent on other people is always uncomfortable. It never works, never in the way that we want. So that's kind of like a dubious habit or pattern. These are perfectly natural. Our whole society is kind of like built up on this. I don't want anybody to feel like, oh, gee, this is terrible. I'm doing this. No, this is the human condition. And the Buddha is pointing to this, that sometimes that we don't even notice. We just keep on thinking, okay, the next moment, the next thing that I'm doing. This idea that the near shore is dubious, it's also perilous. It's this way in which we're trying to distract ourselves or avoid ourselves from this discomfort, from these patterns that don't quite work the way that we wish that they would. We can't always be distracted away from what we want to do. We can't numb ourselves or avoid ourselves. So there's so many things that we can use to distract ourselves. Workaholism, screens, food, just any like behavior that feels like there has a push behind it to try to, like we just feel like we really have to do it. Some of our, you might say, perilous ways in the near shore, because this leads to harm. This can lead to harm to ourselves or to others or to both. There can also be a way in which we are maybe avoiding some of these emotions that we have, this grief or unprocessed loss. Maybe we're like skipping over some of the big losses in our life or grief, thinking like, oh yeah, I'm over that. But we sometimes there's a feeling when we're quiet, it starts to well up or maybe be felt as heaviness. And then we do something to distract ourselves to make sure that it doesn't arise. Because there's this way when we don't acknowledge some of our emotions, grief or anger or some of these ways, that when they're unacknowledged, and we feel like we can't be with them, then we often are falling into numbness or maybe just being reactive. Recently, I found myself getting angry with a friend of mine. Completely, like, you know, the anger was not in the intensity of the anger absolutely did not match the situation. Like, oh yeah, there's some little bit of unprocessed emotion here that's getting expressed in this moment. This is so common, so common. So what does the Buddha have to say about this? He's saying the near shore is dubious and perilous, and these are some of the ways I described it. We can find plenty of ways. The path to the other shore is to meet this dukkha, meet this discomfort, meet what's dubious, meet what's perilous, meet what's actually happening in our life. This moment, I'm talking about this moment. I'm not talking about past and future and other people. I'm talking about just this moment. Can we turn towards them, see them, meet them as best we can? And this might mean if it's the dukkha, the uncomfortableness is really strong, maybe it's just like, hi, anger, I see you. Okay, I'm not going to hang out there right now. It feels too much. Maybe it's just a tapping into. But there's a way in which just tapping into is a way that we can respect and honor our experience instead of trying to, you know, shove it away into the corner or something, which is, you know, socially validated. Well, all of us are doing this to some way, some extent, right? So, but there's this way, if we give up the ideas that life should always be comfortable, there's a way that can be relaxing, like, oh, yeah, there's discomfort here. This is what it means to be human. And then this feeling like we have to fix everything right now can soften. And our capacity to be with discomfort can increase. We start to gain some confidence. Oh, yeah. Okay, I was with that other uncomfortable experience. For me, my Buddhist practice started accidentally through yoga teachings, and unbeknownst to me, I was doing yoga. Some of you have heard this story. It's a style of yoga where you'll take a pose, just a very mild pose, but you hold it for a long time. So the first minute, it's perfectly fine. And then the second minute, it starts to feel uncomfortable. Then the third minute, and the fourth minute, and fifth minute, as it gets longer, you're going like, oh my goodness, this is uncomfortable. And the yoga teacher, she would be giving, now I would call them like tiny little dharma talks, you know, while we're holding these poses. I had no idea that my learning to be with physical discomfort was also translating to be with emotional discomfort, or discomfort with conversations with people. I could be present when somebody was telling me something that I didn't want to hear. It was astounding. So just to increase our capacity to be uncomfortable in a way that's available to us, not in a way that we're going to jump right into the most difficult thing and then feel overwhelmed and then boom, you know, that's not helpful. That's not the direction we're going. Can we meet things that are a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10 and just practice there? Do not underestimate how powerful this can be. This is something that's readily accessible that we can do. Let's not wait until the worst, terrible things that happen in our lives show up. And then we work with it as best we can. But there's a way we can practice with very simple things that makes it so much easier when the more difficult things arise, because difficult things will arise. We're all going to die. People you love are going to die. This is what the human life has. So what are some of the ways that we can meet some of the dukkha? And that's, maybe I should say, many of you know this, that this idea that human life has dukkha, this discomfort, is the first noble truth. the Buddha talks. This is like a foundational teaching. And it's not the first noble truth to discourage us, like, yeah, life's a bummer. You don't like this feeling. It's the first noble truth so that we can stop blaming ourselves. It's the first noble truth so we can stop feeling like, oh my gosh, my life is terrible. I have to fix everything. This is exhausting to try to fix everything. It doesn't work. I'm not saying that we can't fix some things, but there's this way we're trying to fix everything. So what are some of the ways that we can turn towards dukkha, stop blaming ourselves, and be with the experience? One, and this is also a foundational teaching in this tradition, is to recognize things change. Things change. Everything changes. There aren't exceptions. It just depends on what kind of magnitude we want to look at things. Mountains seem like they're not changing, but anybody who's ever walked on a mountain knows that every time you take a footstep, there's a little bit of dirt that moves down, and, you know, trees are growing and animals are doing things. You know, there's whatever way we look at it, we can see the changing nature. But there's this way that we are changing. Of course we are. We have different moods, different thought patterns. People in our lives are changing. They have different moods, different thought patterns. Our bodies are changing. Maybe there's institutions, they're changing. Things aren't exactly the way that they were before. Different people are part of them. So there's this way that we are often trying to seek permanent happiness. Of course we want to be happy, and we want to be happy all the time. Of course we do. But often we're thinking like, okay, I'm going to be happy, I don't know, with something. We want it to be permanent, but nothing is. It's changing. So is there this way that we can stop trying to seek permanent happiness in things that are changing, temporary? Or maybe we are grieving a relationship that has changed. And can we recognize that things are changing not because something is inherently wrong with you, but because that's the nature of reality? And this also just helps us to bring compassion to experiences instead of this bitterness. Like, why are things not how they used to be? Dang it. Instead of like, oh yeah, things are different. And there's this way in which when we meet them just as they are at that moment, then this makes room for some of this softness and this gentleness that I tried to point to in the guided meditation, that we can meet some discomfort and not try to change it, just with some openness and softness. So one way to meet the dukkha is to recognize everything is changing. And some of the dukkha, not all of it, some of it is because we want things to stay the same. We're not recognizing how much we want it to stay the same, but can we recognize that things are changing? And then here's the radical move. What I would say the radical move of the Dharma is, can we befriend some of these difficulties? Can we befriend some of this uncomfortableness? The simple ones. We're going to start where it's easy. Absolutely, you have to start where it's easy. It's a really tall order. In fact, I would say, by definition, if there's difficulties on a scale of 1 to 10, by definition, you cannot befriend things that are at 10. Because that 10 has a little bit of hostility in it, right? And hostility and befriending are not the same thing. So start way over here, where there's the twos and the threes, ones, twos, and threes. Start there and befriend those difficulties first. When the temperature isn't quite right, when you forgot to bring something to work and now it's going to be a little bit of a hassle, or you have to, the check engine light goes on in the car, you're like, oh, I have to bring it in, or maybe the, this is what happened, time to get the oil changed or something. I don't know what it's telling me, something like this, like, oh, okay, I want to take care of this. Can we just like feel the discomfort, like, oh yeah, this is not my preferred thing to do. And can we just like, yeah, discomfort feels like this. This little annoyance feels like this. So can we treat some of our difficulties with care, with respect, because they're part of our life and they're part of everybody's life. It's, again, I keep on using this expression, but this is what it means to have a human life. And then maybe I'll close with a poem. Many of you who have been to my talks will not be surprised. This poem is by Rosemary Traumer. And it's called Love Like Water. Love Like Water by Rosemary Traumer. We could say the pain was a block so great it could not be moved. We could say love did not try to move it. Love simply dissolved the mass and surrounded it the way water meets a block of salt, breaking apart each ionic bond until every atom of sodium and chloride is surrounded by molecules of water. And in this way, and sooner than you'd think, the pain was rearranged into minuscule bits. And there was no part of the pain that was not touched by love. The pain was no less, it's true, but mixed with love, dispersed, the pain became something new. Something vital that encouraged a different kind of life, a substance that supported buoyancy, a medium to carry me. I love this idea of, you know, water dissolving salt is a way, I mean, the salt, the sodium and the chloride is still there with the water molecules, just in a different form. So in the same way, meeting difficulties with care and respect, like acknowledging them instead of trying to ignore or repress or shove them down. And again, I'm saying start where it's easy. These one, two, and threes. And I'm also pointing to our present moment experience. I am not talking about conceptual things out there or things in the past or in the future or other people. I'm talking about this moment's experience right now, right here. Just to meet it. It turns out that doing this again and again and again and again as best we can, your life starts to unfold in a way in which has so much beauty and grace and loveliness to it. It doesn't mean that uncomfortableness is completely gone. What it means is that uncomfortableness, like the problem, has drained out of it. It's still there, but it's not a problem. It's just an uncomfortable experience. Something to be with, to experience, to work with if needed. So often our trying to get rid of uncomfortable experiences is just making them worse. So there's this way that, and this does take a certain amount of trust, to trust that we don't have to fix everything right now. This is a hard sell because society is telling us all the time, no, 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 you have to fix it. Buy this to fix it. Oh, dislike or hate those other people to fix it. Or, you know, it's crazy the things that as a society we've come up with, ways to fix any sense of uncomfortableness. So maybe I'll read this poem again. Love Like Water by Rosemary Traumer. We could say the pain was a block so great it could not be moved. We could say love did not try to move it. Love simply dissolved the mass and surrounded it, the way water meets a block of salt, breaking apart each ionic bond until every atom of sodium and chloride is surrounded by molecules of water. And in this way, and sooner than you'd think, the pain was rearranged into minuscule bits, and there was no part of the pain that was not touched by love. The pain was no less, it's true, but mixed with love, dispersed, the pain became something new. Something vital that encouraged a different kind of life. A substance that supported buoyancy. A medium to carry me. I have so much appreciation for Rosemary Traumer. I feel inspired by her poetry. I feel like she describes and points to things in a way that, I don't know, just often is not available in like regular language or something like this. So maybe I would say part of the reason why we meditate is not so that we feel good or of course that happens. We have more ease and sometimes, you know, we have a certain amount of relaxation. But I would say part of the meditation is to help us build the courage to stay present, to meet the dukkha, to acknowledge the dukkha. And again, I'm going to talk about one, twos, and threes here, because I know when people hear like meet the dukkha, they want to jump into the you know, most absolute difficult thing. And this is not where we start. We start with the ones, twos, and threes of our present moment experience. There's this way of meditation, staying seated until the bell rings. It's not always comfortable. Just it's one way in which we are training ourselves with this discomfort. And if this meditation, if we have some warm-heartedness, some openness, spaciousness, is a way in which we can meet it, meet the discomfort. Maybe in the way that love, like water, meets salt and gets dissolved. So now I'd like to provide an opportunity for you all to talk to one another. Maybe what is some of your, I have like a number of questions here that I could ask you to discuss, and I'm trying to feel into what would be, I don't know, what's appropriate here. Maybe I'll start with this. So I talked about how the near shore is dubious and perilous. I love these words. And maybe perfectionism or people-pleasing or striving or emotional avoidance of things or chronic, I think I already said this, striving. Is there a way in which your near shore has some of these patterns that you feel like maybe a part of them could be met with just acknowledging or to yourself, just meeting, oh yeah, sometimes this is what happens. And can it be met with some warmth and care? So you do not have to say your deepest, darkest secrets to other people. This is for your benefit. It's not for them to understand everything about your life. But there's a way in which, maybe even just to say out loud, you can use a generic words if you like. There's a way in which I find myself, for example, striving a lot. And when I feel into it, I can feel the sense of restlessness and the exhausted feeling. And maybe right now I can meet this with care. That's like an example of something you might say in your small group. So you're just allowing, there's a way in which we are providing the opportunity for other people to just say out loud and maybe touch into something that is a pattern or an experience that is a little bit uncomfortable. And everybody has some warm-heartedness and like allow, create the conditions, the space in which people can touch into as best you can. Again, see how many times I can say this. Things that are ones, twos, and threes on the scale of uncomfortableness. And can you just maybe say some words that represent it and meet it with some softness, some gentleness, some respect, some care, some warmth, whatever word feels available to you. And other people are witnessing and extending goodwill towards you, towards each other. So why don't you get into groups of three? You can decide whether it's the same group of three or the others. There doesn't need to be a lot of crosstalk. Maybe it's just one person who shares and meets into, and then other people are holding the space, and then the next person goes, shares, and other people are holding the space, and then the third person goes and holds the space. And then we'll come back and debrief a little bit after that. Okay, so here we go. So we don't have a lot of time now, but would somebody like to share how that was, this the guided meditation and or the small discussion that you had afterwards, or a question? You look like you want to say something, Lily. No. You had that look on your face. I thought maybe. Does anybody have something they'd like to share? I'm sorry I rang the bell so early. Thank you, Susan.
I found it very helpful to hear this image of the raft again, and particularly that you drew attention to gathering up the materials where we stand. That was really important. Not going to REI. And so it doesn't. It just means, like, what am I stewing in right at this moment? That's what it means for me.
Yeah. Thank you.
And I note that a lot of what I'm stewing in is yesterday and the future. It's not like what is right now. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit difficult, the emphasis on discomfort. What happens when you are feeling like, if I don't deal with yesterday, if I'm not going to build on yesterday or the future fears, then I'm actually okay right now. So I guess that's how you build your raft.
Exactly.
You can float with that.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you, Diana. I get it.
Thank you, she said. Okay, so with this beautiful teaching by Susan, maybe we'll close this evening. Thank you all for your practice and your attention. I wish you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. And if you'd like, you're welcome to talk to me, but otherwise, I'll hope to see you another time. Thank you.